Today on Chesapeake Shores, we talk about scones, ketchup, and buffet pasta. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody.
I am now starving after that food-filled intro today.
And that was thanks to you.
I just felt like it was a very food-centric episode, and I wanted to make sure that we got them all in.
Yes, you're right. Hello, Chessies. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. You're here during Chesapeake Shores Season 2, Episode 6, Grand Openings. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter, at SerafiniTV. Joining me...
Hi, Chessies. It's Stefan Lovegrove. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Dr. Lovegrove, DrLovegrove. And I can't believe we're on episode 6 already.
I know.
When you said that, I mean, I know it. There's been a lot. A lot has happened, but we're already halfway through.
And it's crazy. The previews were already saying 3 episodes to the finale. It was like, no, we're not there yet. We're not there.
Is it 10 total?
It's 10 total.
So we're just over the hill, halfway mark. And what a season. What a dramatic season.
So much. And a lot of drama in this episode. Real quick, what were your overall thoughts about this one?
Grand openings. I don't want to be a broken record making this point because I've made it before, but I feel like the writers do this every other thing with the storylines. So like Bree and Simon, we had nothing last week because Simon was on the book tour.
Yes.
And it picked up this week. And I felt like that with a couple things with Jess and David, you know, personally. And I felt like a bunch of storylines from 2 weeks ago picked back up, but that meant the stuff we made predictions on, specifically with like Mick and Thomas, kind of took a back burner.
Again.
Which I was fine with. Yes, I think we totally were fine with Mick and Thomas taking a back burner. So anyway, we picked back up with stuff from 2 weeks ago, and I thought it was a romance-filled episode.
I feel like this episode covered a lot of the romantic relationships in this episode, and we'll definitely get into it, but it felt like more of let's focus on the family and what's happening with the family compared to everything else in the world or in the community, in the town. It's just family and what they're doing with their lives. So let's start with Jess and David. David's back. I mean, he was kind of always there, but always the
mysterious man. There was a time where he wasn't. I thought he left at the end of summer. There was a brief moment there, but he's back.
And
he's back in the show.
He's there, but he's always been there, but we never really knew anything about him, and neither did Jess. I love how they're very self-aware, like we are. Like we know nothing about David. But what were your thoughts of David? He's kind of having a hard time opening up about him and his past and just where he comes from.
Well, first of all, I want him as a personal chef. And I don't blame Jess for being like, just taste the food that he's continually making for us.
The best coffee ever. I mean,
Apparently. So I want him as a personal chef. But, you know, I was remembering this week when they had the guest who we didn't know who it was, turned out to be the New York Times guy.
Yes.
But David made a comment. That was last week, right?
Yes.
It's hard. It's so much happens in the show.
I know.
Last week, when that happened, David said, I know a lot of people like that, or I've known a lot of people like that. And I thought that was the biggest hint we got about him of all. You know, we haven't gotten a lot. But I got a politics vibe from that. I thought maybe his parents were, you know, like prolific politicians or something was my guess. I definitely think that he has high profile family background and that's why he's used to being more confidential. That's my theory. What are your thoughts on David?
I mean, I kind of have a prediction also about him, but when he was talking about his family after, this was after the whole big O'Brien family dinner, when he was talking to Jess, saying that he has a girl, like a brother, a sister, and he doesn't really talk to his family. Like, they didn't really have that strong family dynamic that the
The O'Briens.
The show, the O'Briens don't really have, they have that family relationship. They can sit down and have a nice dinner together. Where it sounds like David's family didn't, or he didn't grow up with that. He doesn't know that relationship. And I think that's why he also had a hard time talking about his family, because he doesn't have a great relationship with his family like the O'Briens do.
That's a good point. And I have two things to say about that. One is the O'Briens, I think, as much as Connor, we'll get into this, but as much as Connor thinks that, you know, they just put up a good appearance, mm-hmm. they really do have a pretty coherent family. And, you know, I do think that they're so comfortable with opening up about their family. And you're 100% right. You know, it's not an easy topic for everybody. It's not something that everybody has a good set of stories and memories to share. So that definitely is part of it. We now know enough about David to know his childhood wasn't the easiest. His parents and him may not be on great terms, or his siblings. So at the end of the day, I think it makes total sense if that's the O'Brien's, you know, touch point for conversation, that he's not going to feel super comfortable. Right. I also think trust, it's so funny that we're having this conversation, because I was just listening to a podcast today about trust takes time. And right. I have thoughts particularly about Kevin that we'll get into, but so many of the O'Briens just rush into like, yeah, come over, meet the family, we'll spill it all. Mm-hmm. And I partly think, you know, maybe there is some insidious secret. You know, Janae is bringing up in the comments, it was odd that David freaked out so much about the article using his name.
In the New York Times, yeah.
Right. So maybe there are some secrets there. But also, maybe just trust takes time. Maybe he just doesn't want to rush into the vulnerability like the rest of the O'Briens seem to. I don't know.
Right. And it just makes me question, like, is he, has something happened in his past, like his personal past, maybe not with his family, just with him and maybe his future life before we knew him, before he came to Chesapeake Shores, that he's ashamed of or he's running away from. That's also another reason why he's not talking about where he came from and who he is. It's like maybe he did something in the past that he doesn't want to face.
Well, and the funny thing is, if it had happened in Chesapeake Shores, everyone would know about it, because you get the impression in this small town stuff gets around. Mm-hmm. But because no one there knows him, I mean, if that is the case, he's hiding out very successfully.
He's hiding something
right.
very successfully.
I don't know.
Will this be answered in this season?
Ooh.
Do you think?
With 4 episodes left?
Maybe. Quite possibly.
See, I think we're going to get really curious this week, and then next week it's not going to be in the episode at all.
They're not going to even answer it.
So, I don't know. I think we might get a little more from him. I don't think that we're going to get a full backstory on David in the next couple weeks, no.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, we got a few answers now, and then come back to it in a couple weeks, and maybe get a few more answers. We'll see. But Kevin and Sarah, I'm liking this. This is a slow burn type of relationship. But what did you think of Sarah's interaction with Kevin, eating his food? They're now becoming like more conversational, and they're getting into deeper topics about their family and who they are as people.
Well, I hate to say this, I'm not a huge fan yet.
Okay.
Of the three relationships, and we have a lot of O'Brien sibling romance, so we can take a poll in the live chat and in the comments, which is your favorite O'Brien sibling romance out of Connor and Kevin and Bree and maybe Jess, if you include, I don't know, but at least out of those three, it's budding romances, it's kind of my least favorite, because I just feel like she's playing games. I mean, to the point that they haven't, just in the dating process, they haven't had a normal, actual first date yet. And I just think these run-ins in public and, you know, sitting down at his table and just eating his food and having a quick convo and then dashing off, I would be very annoyed. Like, initially, I get, you know, being flirty and playful and maybe a little bit hard to get, but I feel like she's playing games. It's just, I don't know. It just annoyed me.
Yeah, I feel like she's kind of stringing him along now. And I'm like, they're definitely interested in each other. They keep, you know, playing coy with each other and here and there. But I think, like you said, I think they actually just need to sit down, those two together, alone, without the family, just themselves, and actually have an actual real date and see where it goes from there. Because the only times we see them, they're in public or they're just literally passing ships, you know. They need actual designated time to focus on each other.
Well, and it's not reciprocal because Kevin is, I mean, she can't use the excuse anymore that he didn't call her right away.
Yeah, because she's not calling him now.
Right. And I just think it's overboard. I think Kevin has clearly asked her out on a date. Kevin has clearly indicated that he wants to get to know her. He wants to sit down. He wants to go on a date. Christy in the comments says, I'm still on the fence. And that's exactly how I feel. I very much feel on the fence still about Sarah. And I do have to make this point. Of all of the O'Brien kids inviting someone to dinner, it's like, why are you inviting? I people on Twitter disagreed with me on this, but why are you inviting her to dinner when she won't even give you a first date? You're already taking her to meet the family?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they move quick.
That's where I can respect the whole, like, let the trust build up, let it take time of David, because I think that's crazy fast.
That is. But maybe, I mean, it could be a regional thing or just could be a family situational thing. Some families are more open to having whoever they want come in and out of their lives. And I think maybe Sarah, and well, in fairness, I'll be devil's advocate. When Sarah first asked Kevin over, I mean, she introduced him to all the firemen, you know, and she said, these guys are like my brother. That's basically her family. So the first time they interacted or, like, tried to have a date, he met her family. So why not she meet his family?
There's an interesting theory in the comments right now that what if Sarah is hiding things like David, which is an interesting theory.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I was like, why do you think Sarah isn't, you know, going out on a date yet? Like, is she holding something? Is she hiding from something?
Well, and Chris made the point, and by the way, Chris, thank you for your feedback, because he always has very insightful comments.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris made the point that in terms of plot development and character arcs, Kevin had PTSD as a storyline, and then that just quickly disappeared from the plots, and he just very quickly got into dating. I don't know. I just, between Kevin and the Georgia stuff, and I don't know. It seems to be, for somebody that seems to be playing games with him and just not sitting down and being normal, upfront, whatever the word is, I just feel like it was very, you know, I admitted on Twitter, I was like, I always get embarrassed when I bring somebody up, even in conversation, much less introduce them to friends or people in my life. And then I'm like, never mind, guys, it didn't work out. Like, to bring someone to family dinner who won't even go on a first date with you, it just seems weird to me.
Okay.
That's enough. I love Kevin. I love Brendan Penny. That's just my thoughts.
What did you think of the conversation after the dinner when they were on the bench and she's trying to, she figures out Kevin a little bit more. It's like, you're the person who's calm and keeps everybody together. You're that thread.
Well, ironically, it's interesting that Chris brought up the PTSD thing, because ironically, that's what I thought about, is I was like, and I think that wears on Kevin. Mm-hmm. I do think that he has to be the stable rock for all of the family. I brought up before with Megan, he has to be the one that, like, never has issues with Megan regardless. And I don't know. I'm still on the fence about Sarah.
There needs to be more Kevin, Megan scenes.
I know. I love Kevin and
Megan
scenes.
We've only had maybe two this season.
I would love to have more of those. Or really any Kevin sibling conversations, I'm here for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, this Kevin-Sarah relationship or whatever it is right now, it's slow burn. It's starting, unfortunately, it's starting to feel more friend-zoney than relationship. Like
Kevin and Sarah,
yeah,
is
Kevin
to you.
Sarah. Yeah. Or for all the times that they've communicated, passed back and forth, this, like, I'm eating food off your plate. It's seeming more friend. I don't know, for some reason.
To me, it's the dynamic of if it was coworkers and there's, like, a tension in the air, but somebody's taken or you're not gonna date or the person's officially said they're not interested. That's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like they're dating and getting to know each other.
Yeah. Well, we know they need to sit down. Connor and Gabrielle, what do you think of this relationship? Do you think this one's going too fast?
Wait, Gabrielle?
Danielle. Oh my God, I don't know why I put it.
I was like, did I get it wrong? I thought it was Danielle.
Danielle. Yes.
So I
Daniel.
Ooh.
Yes.
I still don't think this is my favorite, because I think my favorite of the what I'm calling the budding romances is Connor, or is Bree and Simon. But I really like this one. I really like Connor and Danielle. I like what she brings out of him. I think she's good for him.
Yeah. I like that they're honest with each other. And even Danielle says, like, I like the side of you without the bells and whistles.
Well, and okay, this is actually a very good contrast to draw of this dynamic versus Kevin and Sarah, because I like that she can call him out. Like, I thought it was so cute that she brought up the painting and was like, you painted it upside down. I like that she can call him out a little bit, but in a way that I think brings out his best qualities, you know? Yeah. Like, he, for them to have the conversation and him to say, well, you're doing what you love, that's got to count for something. I think that's definitely him internally processing his job at the moment. And is the job that he currently has really him doing what he loves? No, I don't think so. But my point is, I don't think Sarah is necessarily bringing out the best attributes of Kevin. I feel like he's just endlessly in this chase with her. Whereas Connor and Danielle feels really healthy and, you know, it's still in the early stages, but I see that a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I do too. And I think Danielle can be really good for Connor, especially if he's unhappy with his life and where he is with his life right now. Again, Danielle could be that person to keep him on the straight and narrow. And I think that's good. Yeah, it's good, healthy relationship in that way when they can, like, keep each other in checks and balances type of.
Well, and she does it very softly. She's not overbearing.
Yes.
You know, someone with a Sarah personality could never work with Connor. But I think she points him back to his true north in a way that's really good for him. And people in the live chat seem to like Connor and Danielle.
Yeah, we like them too.
Janae says we're not seeing enough of Connor to really see how I feel. I do, you know, I do think we're getting more of Connor. Slowly but surely. And I keep asking for more of Connor. I do feel like we're gradually getting more of Connor. And I don't know. I honestly think Danielle could make a great mom someday. Maybe that's too forward thinking for me to be thinking about this,
like,
but
a little early, but I can.
I'm not saying necessarily with Kevin. I know we're in the early stages of that relationship. I just feel like she has a really good, even maternal way of helping people process things and giving advice, but not in an overbearing way. Yeah. As Christy says, the voice of reason in some ways.
There you go. There you go. I completely agree, Christy. Thank you. Another relationship I completely agree with, Bree and Simon. This is so good.
I was waiting
for
this.
Not just because of the accent, but I'll throw the accent in there. I mean, it helps. But Bree and Simon, what do you think?
Let's talk about Marissa, because I did see on Twitter that you said if somebody with a British accent asked you out, you would say yes.
Absolutely.
I now want to find someone with a British accent that we can send Marissa's way.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Chessie, if
guys,
you have any leads.
I drink a lot of coffee, so that would be a very long date, I'll tell you. Just throwing that out there. Okay, I digress. Bree and Simon. I really like Simon because, again, this is another relationship. He came in and he wants to learn more about Bree. And even she's kind of afraid to open up about her past and, like, her writing. She's a little bit embarrassed, but I think they're opening each other up in certain ways and getting, like, more personal. I like it.
I was so proud of him for asking her out so directly. Mm-hmm. And, like, making a separate trip to do it. Honestly, I really hadn't made this contrast until just now. But if you look at the dynamics, I feel like Kevin is trying much harder than Sarah right now. I feel like Connor and Danielle are very equally trying.
Even.
It seems very reciprocal. She's expressing interest, making moves. He's expressing interest, making moves. And then I feel like on this one, Simon is definitely trying harder. And at least at the beginning of the episode. And Bree doesn't really know what to think. And Nell is obviously pushing it along.
So is Megan.
But I love this relationship. I love that Simon made a trip for her. And I love that he's self-aware.
Yes.
Like, I love that he doesn't think he's all that and just is arrogant and out of touch. I think he's very self-aware about what's happening with his writing and with his career, and I like that. It makes me, like, more endeared to him that he is self-aware in that way.
Yeah, and it says a lot when someone can, like, self-reflect and actually be honest about it, because it shows that if he's aware then and he's okay with it, he'll find, like, the flaws in someone else and also be okay with it, you know? And I like that, because he realizes, like, what he's doing may not be the best, but it's not exactly what he wants to do. He has other ambitions, other better writing, which we'll get to his second book, too. But also wanting, you know, Brie and her writing, her earlier writing, it's maybe not the best of, but it could be better. It could be something that she actually wants to do. And they, like, they both kind of have this, like, novel. Remember season one when Brie was like, maybe I should write a novel? Yeah, you should. And even Simon wants to write a novel, so.
Are you comparing her eighth grade writing to Simon's hack job writing, as it has been called?
Well, I can't really compare it, because we didn't see either. I mean, we got a little snippet, right, of Simon's, and we got a little snippet of Bree's, but we don't even know what she wrote. We just know it moved Simon to tears.
I think it says a lot. I was sitting there remembering, I wrote this screenplay in eighth grade, and Marissa, it was so bad. And I was sitting there like, it would be mortifying if anybody, much less a romantic interest, but if anybody in my life got a hands on something I wrote in eighth grade, I would be horrified.
I hear you.
So, you know, I was cracked. I love the parental involvement in this one. I loved Nell's laugh, or whatever that noise was, her reaction in the house. And then Megan, Janae brought this up in the live chat. Megan saying, I have an interview, and fumbling to leave them alone.
She was kind of starstruck, Megan.
She was. Somebody in the live chat said, do we have a ship name for Brie and Simon? I don't know if we have one yet, but we need one, because I am shipping them real hard. I love this dynamic. And
Bryman. Oh, I don't know.
Bryman or Bryman. I'll take either one. I'm happy with the
Smee. It could be Smee. I don't know.
Chris feels uncertain about things. Interesting. Chris says, what did you think of the uncertain look from Brie when Megan had asked her about the relationship with Simon? And his impression was Brie wasn't that certain because she wants to get writing. You know, I don't think that, honestly, if anything, I think they will encourage each other to be their best and to write well. Mm-hmm. This episode is so full of relationship contrasts, because it was so focused on all the different O'Brien siblings and their relationship dynamics. And, of course, we're going to get into where there may be conflict of career.
Oh, absolutely.
In a little while. But I actually will say, with Simon and Brie, if anything, I think they will help each other. I think they will push each other to be their best.
I think so, too. And I think Megan's conversation with Brie was really good and pushed her in the right direction, too, because she did ask those good questions, like, maybe you like him for other reasons, and those reasons are more important. Maybe you like him more for just his writing. You obviously don't like his writing. You like him as a person and his personality.
Which says so much.
Yeah.
Because I would much rather have it that way than liking the person's career and then realizing you like their public persona or their work more than them as a person. That would not be good.
Yeah.
A good situation.
I think Brie had, like, really good eye-opening conversations with that, and that helped with her self-awareness. She was afraid of her writing, and she was afraid if it's not good compared to, you know, a published writer. But I think her vulnerability shows how good this relationship can be, because Simon was also vulnerable to her.
Well, and Megan made a good point that nobody's on a pedestal. What if she loved Simon's writing? Mm-hmm. Then it would put this awkward, you know, if it was a fan dynamic, how would they really date if she was like a fangirl of him as an author? But Megan reminded her, he's not on a pedestal. From the beginning, you didn't respect his writing. So who cares if he doesn't respect yours? Then you're just even.
Yep. Maybe you like him for other reasons, and those reasons are more important. I agree. I think Megan was great in this episode. I mean, Barbara, you're always great. But let's talk about Megan, shall we?
Let's talk about it. It was a great Megan episode. And I thought last week was great for her. And another great Megan episode.
Of course. What did you think of her job interview? She's being overqualified. At first, I thought it was going to be an ageism issue. But I'm glad it wasn't. I'm glad it was more like overqualifications. You're too good for this job. Will you even be happy here?
Well, I was glad for that moment because for two reasons. One, do you know how many people are legitimately in that situation in 2017? I have a friend who's a law graduate of law school mm-hmm. and had to work as a server for a while. So many people are in a position of struggling to find jobs that they are qualified, not overqualified for.
Yep.
So I'm glad, another example of the great writers and producers of this show giving us storylines that are very relevant and where people are living. But also, I was thankful for this message of don't settle for a job that you just can do. But I mean, the guy flat out asked her in the interview, do you want to do this?
Yeah.
And she said, no, not really.
Yeah. Don't work for us.
Right. So props to the guy for saying, you know what, if you absolutely, and we've talked about, the O'Briens are not a family that needs money and is ever going to operate from a place of desperation, which is a blessing that Megan doesn't have to work.
Right.
We should acknowledge not everybody has that option. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And especially for a temporary season. I've certainly mm-hmm. been there. But I like the message of don't settle, and it worked out for her. I'm glad she didn't settle because look what, I don't want to say fell into her lap. I think there was some involvement behind the scenes.
Well, I think it's like when one door closes and another door opens, and we definitely saw that opening opportunity in this one. Do you like her second job that she actually got, the arts liaison coordinator of the city?
Yes.
Definitely fitting.
I feel like she passed the test. I feel like it was sometimes like you get sent tests by life of this is the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of what you want because she did say, I'm very excited about going back to work. Kind of what you want, but not fully there yet. And so you have this test of like, what are you going to do? And she passed the test and she's now the arts liaison coordinator. And I am just very excited about the storyline.
Yeah,
I think there's
absolutely.
Many great things to come from Megan in that role. So congratulations to her on the new job.
Yay.
And Megan. Can we talk about her and Mick?
Oh, I was actually going to, before we get to her and Mick, what did you think of her approach to Councilman Robertson before she even got her job?
Before she found out that
before
a resume had been submitted?
Before she got that liaison position. What do you think of that interaction?
What I thought was so interesting is I watched the episode twice, but unless I missed it, she never gave Mick a guarantee that she was going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. They had a conversation, and she just said, you never asked me for help before.
Yes.
But she never promised him, yes, I'm going to help you. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what character it reminded me of. Maybe an Abby-like move. Even more confident than we've seen Abby. I mean, I just felt like this was a very cool side of Megan to see come out. Because we've not seen the Megan that worked for the Met very much.
No.
Certainly not this season at all.
We only see Megan coming home back home from the Met.
Well,
never
and
seen
it's,
the Met.
It's nice because she's on kind of fragile ground with her family because there's pain and stuff they have to work through. But clearly there's this confident career woman in her, and I loved seeing that side of her. She really stood up for it and was like, yes, Megan O'Brien, yes, I know, but this is what I need. And I liked seeing that side of her a lot.
I love the assertiveness of Megan because, Barbara always says, like, don't be afraid to go out for, what you want and fight for what you want. And I definitely saw that, like, I felt like the writers wrote the scene for her. Because she is her character, she is Megan, and it kind of just translated to Megan, that art imitating life. And it felt like Megan was that assertive person to go after, like, yes, they're trying to get the live music permit, but the passion that was behind it and, like, the reasons why, it inspires us and it drives us, You can't deprive people of culture and art and music and happiness and laughter and all and X, Y, and Z. And I loved that.
I thought it was such a Barbara moment.
Plea. Yes, it was. It was such a passionate plea that I like still believe in because I'm an art student. I have a BFA. And so like arts and creativity is such a big personal thing to me. And then to see just a character fight for arts and like, I don't know, it just kind of hit home with me a bit. And I love that.
And I thought her argument made sense that like we need a unifying thing and this mm-hmm. is going to unify the town and this is going to bring us together and it's important. you know, I do think a lot of times arts are viewed as just kind of an expensive waste by decision makers and politicians and whatever.
Yeah.
But the truth is arts play such an important role in the community. And I just so great for Megan to have that conversation, to stand up for it. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the live chat, I think, described her very accurately as a go-getter.
Yes.
The go-getter Megan. I loved it.
I love it. Yeah, she definitely is the go-getter. And I feel you can see some of those qualities in some of the O'Brien children, but not in all of them.
But I do have to say, sometimes I wonder if we get a little conspiracy theory-esque on this show, because somebody's asking what really made her leave her New York job other than wanting to fix her relationships. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think everybody on this show has a shadowy secret to hide.
She
just
wanted to be with her family.
I think she really wanted...
Can that be enough?
I think her priorities shifted.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happens for a lot of people when they reach a certain age in life. Their priorities shift and different things are important to them. But I liked seeing... I like that she's wanting to go back to work. And it's a good reminder, you know. And Abby embodies this so well. But it's a good reminder that this is 2017 and women are multi-passionate. They have multiple interests.
Yes,
and maybe
we are.
She has career interests that she does want to go back to work. She does want to contribute. And she really cares about her family. Of course. Why can't she have both?
She's winning on all fronts. And I think her having a job now in Chesapeake Shores will also, like, put more roots and grounds her in Chesapeake Shores. Like, she has a reason. Like, she had a purpose to go back to Chesapeake Shores to be her with her family. But now she also has another legitimate reason to stay. Not just because of family, but, like, she has a career. She's slowly building her life within Chesapeake Shores. She has a reason to be there.
And I am excited to see where this will go further.
Yeah.
What will this involve? It made me think of the Lantern Festival and just so many possibilities of what could be created and organized and put together for the town.
And, like, what more creative, you know, big fun festivals that we might see that, like, maybe we'll have concerts and not just because of the club, but, like, maybe we'll see other creative artistic
arts,
things
yeah.
within the town. I would love to see that. I would love to see that. All right. Let's move on to Trace and Abby. Grand openings of the bridge. Okay. But was it so
well,
grand?
There's so much to talk about
but
with the two
so
of them.
But was it so grand? Okay. There is a lot that this is, like, the meat and potatoes of this whole episode. At the beginning of the episode, where do you think Trace and Abby was now? Abby now knows that Trace's band came back. Didn't seem that Trace told her, so it doesn't seem their communication is great right now.
So the word I would use at the beginning is awkward.
Okay.
For the begin, like...
Fitting.
I think things progressively, shall we say, unraveled continuously as the episode progressed for them. But awkward is the word at the beginning, with Abby showing up and Trace thought she was early, but it turns out that they're running late.
That's what I always say to people. And I'm like, no. I'm not early.
I'm not early. You're late. But I just thought it was awkward at the beginning. And I don't know. Abby looks wiped out. They've never shown us Abby
so
with
tired.
The dark circles under her eyes and just looking exhausted.
Did you count how many
exhausted.
Cups of coffee she had?
This was a caffeine-filled episode. As I don't know who all besides Michael Burns, but as many acknowledged on Twitter, this was a caffeine-filled episode. I don't know. I thought – so I went back and forth on Lee – all throughout this episode. And
okay.
I'm wondering what you thought. Because last week, I sat here, and Marissa, a day came that I never thought would come. And I sat here, and I defended Lee. And I said, I think that Lee is winning me over a little bit. Because last episode, I really thought she was looking out for Trace. I thought she was being very genuine. I didn't think she was pushing the romantic stuff at all. Lee really did win me over. Not for being with Trace.
No.
Just as a person.
Mm-hmm.
This episode, I didn't know what to think, because there was that moment where she said, whatever you have going on with the kids, surely more important than what we have going
right.
on. There was that one moment. But other than that, I wasn't a big fan of Lee this episode. And so I thought it started off as awkward, and I thought it just got worse.
It did. This was a slow disintegration of their relationship. of Abby.
Disintegration. That is a dramatic word.
It was. I mean, this seriously, their relationship was slowly decomposing right in front of our eyes, and that could be early predictions, but I still think it's going to get worse.
I agree. Someone says some Chessie seem to be writing Trace and Abby off. I think it's going to work out by the finale. I disagree.
Okay.
We have four. We always make predictions accidentally early, but we have four. I mean, I know stuff happens fast. Here's my thing.
Okay.
In a relationship, you never are stagnant. Like, it's either you're growing or it's declining.
Right.
And over the past few weeks, they are not improving this. They're not, we keep waiting to see, are they going to find a way to improve this? Right now, we're on a trajectory of decline. And we've said, obviously, by the time this series is over and crossing fingers we get a season 3 and beyond, we know that Trace and Abby are going to end up together. Yes. But right now, things are declining and it's not getting better.
No, it's not. And also, okay, so now getting to more the middle part of this episode, when the band is now interfering more so with even with their communications when they're together, even like when they kiss, the band interrupts. When they're having a nice, deep, meaningful conversation, the band interrupts, like, hey, we got to play now, you know. The band was always interfering at all the inopportune times. And then also, but there's like this mix of the band issues and then the family issues. I mean, Abby's daughters were sick, so like Abby's family got involved. And then then the band was getting involved. There were just so many things that was pulling them in different directions.
Okay, but I have a point to make here, because I'm team Abby over Trace in this episode. And okay, yep. For whoever said Trace let you down in this episode, me too. Love you, Jesse. Let me down.
Trace was very disappointing in this episode.
Here's the thing. Abby had issues with the kids, which he brought up and said, well, you haven't been that available either. Here's the difference. Mm-hmm. It is the Trace Riley band. Is it not? The Trace Riley band? Which means yep. Trace is in charge. So it's not Abby's fault if her kids get a fever. Mm-hmm. But Trace is in charge of the band. He is in charge of their rehearsals. He is in charge of their schedule. So if Trace is not available because of the band.
And in charge of the club.
Right. And in charge of the club because he's the owner. So if Trace is not available, that is on him, as he's the one making those decisions and setting the schedule. If Abby is not available because of the kids, that's not on Abby. It's not her fault they got sick.
Yeah. And it's also her job, too. I mean, she's working overtime for her job, so
should we pause Abby and Trace for a second to talk about the regional vice president thing for Abby? What do you think about that?
I knew this was coming. What did I say last episode? What did I predict? That New York is going to be calling her for a position, and there's going to be another opportunity for her to go back to New York, and it's this position. It's something out there that she could grab onto, maybe go back to New York.
I have a prediction that I don't like, nor are you going to like. But I'm going to save it for predictions.
Okay.
But it's interesting because Chris in the live chat just put the very controversial comment.
Ooh.
I've been waiting since last night, since this episode aired. I have been waiting to talk about Trace and Abby with all of you. So I'm loving this conversation. But Chris said, I think Lee is the one for Trace at this time. Just too much baggage with Abby as Trace follows his dream. And then somebody said, I'm going to pretend you never said that.
Yeah.
Here's the bottom line. I always think that there's hope. I'm never going to say that there's not hope and you can't work it out.
Right.
I'm just saying right now, things aren't getting better. And I thought it was very telling when Mick said at breakfast, did you catch this? He said, I think there's going to be a lot of late nights from now on. And I don't even think we saw a reaction from Abby, but I just sat there and I was like, that seems very telling of what's happening here.
Yeah. She's like, that's not for me. She literally said, not for me.
Not for me. And I think that they both are telling themselves that it's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, can you show me how it's going to get better?
I completely agree with that, too. Because, I don't think Lee should be with Trace, but I do completely believe that Lee and Trace right now, their careers, what they're doing, they are in both of them are in the same place, and Abby's in a different place. They're focusing on music and the career. Abby's focusing on her family and her career, herself.
Well, and
they're like, it's more so like, I think the only way that I can explain it, you know how people are in the same class? Like, you're together in the same class at the same time, you're doing the same things. But when you leave class, you go your own separate ways. Right now, they're in the same, you know, they're just in the same place. And it makes sense why people might think that Lee is better for Trace. Right now, their careers are more compatible than what Abby is to. But that doesn't mean that they should date. That doesn't mean that they should be in a relationship.
Right. Well, it's funny. I wrote down the word rhythm. Is Lee and Trace have the same rhythm right now? Because
I don't think so, no.
With the late nights?
Oh, Lee and Trace, yes.
Because yes. Someone once told me, they said, never overlook the importance of sharing a rhythm with people. Because they said, you can be so similar as people, you can have the same values, the same things, but if your rhythm is completely different, there's going to be a lot of hurt and a lot of miscommunication. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening right now is Abby's trying to be a mom with kids who are coming down with sickness and being offered a job and trying to do the PTA and not sure if she, what, you know, how much she can manage. And meanwhile, honestly, if you like Trace a whole lot, you might not like me saying this comment, but I think Trace is kind of acting like a college student right now with the whole, oh, we didn't sleep, we're getting breakfast the next morning.
Is this breakfast?
It's very immature. I think Lee and John are at the best being bad friends, maybe even enablers right now because,
bad influence.
Right, because they're not. They should be seeing what's going on and being like, hey, if they're really good friends, hey, Trace, your relationship is disintegrating, to use Marissa's word. And you need to do something about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What I don't like is, how is Abby made to feel like the third wheel? If anything, Lee should feel like the third wheel, right, being around Trace and Abby. But instead, when Abby's there and the band is there, Abby is being made to feel like the third wheel, and I don't like that.
I don't like that either, and it's really unfair to Abby because, like, she's going out of her way to see the band, to be at the club and be with Trace, and then, like, the band takes over. And I understand, like, right now, they have to focus on the band. They have to focus on the club. And there was just different situations that was constantly pulling Abby and Trace apart. When they were at the family dinner, it was the club that was pulling
Trace
apart.
I thought that was so indicative of where they're at.
It was. When the band actually opened for the opening night of the club and they were performing, it was Abby's family that pulled her away from the club. Like, there were different outside situations that was pulling each other apart. And it was, not that they couldn't control it. It just happens. It just shows that the focus isn't on each other. It's on the other things.
And, right. And I think it's important to clarify. I don't think that they've tried everything that they can, and it's just not enough. I just don't think that they're making really conscious effort to make it better. You know, I thought,
Trace did say, I'm going to try to make you a bigger, better priority right now.
Do you mean at the dinner over the buffet?
Yes, the buffet.
I was horrified.
Buffet.
I wrote down horrible date night at the club buffet.
Yeah, because she was not happy with that either. She's like, I thought we meant a real restaurant.
You know, the bottom line is, if I was Abby in this situation, I would not necessarily feel like I was being made a priority. I would feel like I was being worked in and, like, penciled into a packed schedule. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's reciprocal. I think that Abby is going out of her way for Trace much more than Trace is for Abby right
now. Going out for Abby. What did you think of Trace's line? It's my life. It's what I do. I'm not going to give that up. I'm not going to change.
Well,
when he's talking about his career.
I think it's an interesting question of, you know, in Abby's mind, is this a past version of him that he left behind? What is mm-hmm. the current real Trace?
Right.
And, you know, Chris said, I think they've I can't talk today.
I know, words are hard, you guys.
They're just hard. They've set Trace up as a music character, as if that's who he is, like a country star at heart, and that is his focus. So I don't know. The buffet was lame. I don't know what... At the end of the day, music is his big priority right now. And mm-hmm. as Barbara so eloquently said on Twitter, it needs to be two people sharing dreams. And right now it feels like things are in competition.
Yeah, and right now they're not in the same place, which is not good.
No, so again, we're rooting for them. It's yeah. not that we don't want them to work it out or don't think they'll eventually work things out. But right now it's just declining, declining, declining. And man, I don't want it to be too little, too late, but it needs to get on a different trajectory real quick or it's just going to fall apart completely.
Yes. Well, my question is to you, do you think this Trace Riley band is going to last? Now, okay, two different questions. Do you think they're going to last? And what were your thoughts of John Roll having that unauthorized performance? Oh.
Well, John being back is a whole different dynamic. Mm-hmm. Again, with Lee and with just Lee and Trace, it felt like the romance dynamic of her attempting to get back together.
Right.
With Lee, John, and Trace, it feels like an immature roadie touring life dynamic.
This is like the good old times.
And I think it's interesting. I think a lot of people have this crisis where, whether it's late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, they suddenly think like, oh, I miss it. I'm nostalgic. I want to go back to those days.
Right.
Their paths are opposite. And I think it's no accident it lined up in this episode. Well, Abby is being offered regional vice president, which is a big corporate deal.
It is.
Trace is pulling an all-nighter. I mean, at the end of the day, I just
for
think
a gig
they're,
they didn't even get paid for.
Right. Well, did they get it at the end of the day, or they almost didn't get paid?
They were fighting so hard for the money, we still don't know if they got paid or not.
I'm just saying, it feels like Trace is doing buffet pasta and all-nighters while Abby is being given a huge promotion and stepping it up in the PTA. And I just think they're getting pulled in opposite directions right now, and that is hard.
It's hard to watch. It really is.
It's honestly, there's more to a relationship than obviously fun, and you want to stick it out through the not fun times. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I've always heard that in a relationship, the test is, can you still walk side by side alongside each other? And right now, they are not doing that.
No.
They're walking opposite directions. So
they are.
You know, I don't want to overstate the point, but I could not. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I felt like I was watching it disintegrate.
Yes. What did you think of John Roll in the unauthorized performance? Oh, so disrespectful. So not cool.
Oh, and that, yeah. And
so not cool.
It's interesting because I don't think Trace is viewing the club as a business. And we kind of, again, we brought this up earlier.
I think now he is.
To the O'Briens, they don't worry about money. But, like, if Trace is going to make the club successful, it's got to be taken seriously as a business. Mm-hmm. And so he's finally stepping it up. And it's going to be a transition for John to realize this is not the good old days of how it used to be. But don't you think that's really what Trace is battling in his brain? Is what is the real Trace and what does he want? And is it growing up with Abby and, like, having to be a stepdad to kids one day because he's already met them? Mm-hmm. Is it that? Or is it the good old days and band life and touring life? And yes, and Jordan, agree 100%. Very disrespectful. I can't imagine thinking that was okay to do.
No, it wasn't. It was unauthorized. They were drinking. Did you notice all those Red Solo cups? They were drinking. And it also felt
They have gotten arrested for having alcohol there and all these people without a permit and clearances?
And they still don't have the live music permit. So, like, if they got in trouble, they don't have the insurance or the legal right to actually perform. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have tanked the club before it even opened. And that's just
then
so,
again, in terms of risky decisions, I still think that Trace could face further legal ramifications for what he pulled last week. Right. So, I mean, they're living on the edge for sure right now. That is the truth.
It was very disrespectful, and I did not like John for that. And I just had issues with him because I feel like, and it feels like John still he wants to get back to that life when he was happy before the accident, before it affected him, and the fact that he's performing again, you probably made him happy, and he got a little too carried away. But that's also, we the audience have seen how long and how much work that Trace has put into this club, just to have it, even the grand opening night, almost ruined because of they just wanted to have
fun. And thinking about that does give me a little more sympathy for Trace in terms of, yes, he may be in charge of the band, but if this is the kind of stuff they're pooling, you know, it's might be hard to work with them. Yeah. But that then he needs to think about the decision of should he have brought the band back to Chesapeake Shores and brought them into the club.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. Jordan agrees that Trace slips easily into the college kid direction. That's really what it feels like.
Yeah.
And Casey made an interesting point that really Abby knows high school Trace and 15 years have progressed. So who is he now? Do we know? Does Abby know now?
Abby was questioning it. Is this feels like the old Trace. Like that old Trace that she knew that he left behind.
Chris says that Trace may crash and burn if he doesn't focus on one thing because he's trying to take on so many different roles, so many different hats. I think that Trace and Abby could both use a good therapist at this moment.
Yeah.
They may not have PTSD to deal with, but I think with everything going on, they could definitely use a good therapist.
Well, we know Abby won't go to therapy because even in the pilot episode of season one, her sisters were suggesting therapy and she was talking to the dog. Like, she doesn't need therapy.
She doesn't need it.
I feel Abby is
They need couples therapy. Yeah. Can we agree on that?
Abby's too grounded right now. I don't think like she has those issues because she's strong enough to deal with them in the proper way. I don't think Trace is.
We're getting deep with the theories in the comments. We're just getting deep today. Conspiracy theories and behavioral theories, and it's quite a show.
I mean, this band, I mean, we just see everything, like everything's unraveling and it's not pretty.
I want to acknowledge this. Lori said, I wonder if Trace will regret not going solo. Based on what just happened,
he's slowly recovering.
I would already be there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
Would already be there.
All right, anything else about this episode? Oh,
yes.
Nell. I mean, she's great.
Well, yes. Nell, but I want to acknowledge the Thanksgiving. I thought the tuna story was hilarious.
Yes.
With all of those cans of tuna. And honestly, I got to say, I have had friends that thought they were going to deep fry a turkey. And it's, you got to do it right or it messes up.
My dad deep fried turkeys.
Successfully.
Yeah.
Do you have deep fried turkey every Thanksgiving?
No, not every. There was a time where, like, not to call out my dad, there was a time my dad, like, went through a deep frying, you know, period phase where, like, everything was deep fried. I swear my whole family gained, like, 10 pounds.
I mean, but I'm sure it was a yummy summer.
No, it was delicious. But I did love the family aspect, the family dinner, that whole Thanksgiving, because did you notice that it was a long story, but everyone finished the story. Like, they had their one piece that they added to it. It literally went around the table until it finished on Abby.
And
it
that,
was just weird. Not weird, but it was more cool because, like, everyone could finish the story, and it was, like, a big family. It literally went in a circle.
And that moment was, like, Chesapeake Shores at its best and why we watched the show. And the quote of Nell that the love shared around the table is far more important than the meal on top of it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing our table with us.
And I was like, we do share a table with the O'Briens, and we share a table with all of you every Monday.
Yes, we do.
And I love it, and that is all I have about the episode other than my predictions.
Yes, I loved it too. So let's get to predictions, shall we?
I look forward to it every week.
So do I.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
All right, you had some big ones apparently, so...
Okay.
Let's have them.
Well, here's my list. Okay. I now write down a list because I can't forget any predictions, and it's my favorite thing. Fair. So I predict the club is going to open. I predict it's going to go well in terms of it's going to be a hit in Chesapeake Shores. Mm-hmm. But I predict at least for one more week, it's going to be even worse for Abby. Like, I think the club opening will be a big deal, but I think it will be more of what we saw in the final scene. More time apart, more tension, more awkwardness. So that's one prediction. Second of all, I do think we may learn some more about David's family. I don't know if we're going to get everything, but I don't predict it's going to be an issue. Like, I don't think he's a criminal. I don't think that there's something that shadowy, whether it's politics or not. I would love to be right on my guess. But I predict we're going to learn a little bit more about him. I don't predict it's going to be a big romance. Like, I don't think Jess and David is a big romance of this season. I do predict, however, on the romance front, that Connor and Kevin and Bree are all going to have relationships continue to progress. They all seem to be on an okay trajectory. I already said I'm not a huge fan of Kevin and Sarah yet, but I love yes to more of Connor and Danielle, yes to more of Bree and Simon. And my last prediction is I think Wes is going to cause more problems because that last frame with Wes on the couch, I wonder if Wes keeps calling Abby even when it may not be necessary for her to be there because he wants to spend more time with her. And I do wonder if Wes is going to have an altercation where he sees some sort of immature behavior at the club or he witnesses something going on with Trace and he says, look at this, Abby. He's not prepared to be.
You.
Right.
Yeah,
I predict we're going to have a confrontation because things are disintegrating and Wes is watching.
Ooh. That's a pretty good one. My predictions, I think, and I said this before, I still think that Trace and Abby are not going to be together by the end of the season. It's a slow disintegration.
Do you think she'll be tempted to get back with Wes? Is there any possibility of that?
I'm not sure about Wes because, I mean...
Just not Trace by the end of the season.
Trace. But I think this job regional position... back in New York, I think it could be really calling Abby. And if Abby's more focusing on her job and her family, it just makes sense if she chooses this regional thing. Like, I know she's trying to cut back her hours, but if she's not going to be with Trace, it's another thing that she could have. You know, this job.
Well, and my point is Wes would support that, I think.
Yeah.
I think Wes would support the regional vice president, but say why. I thought Wes was going to call her out on being exhausted when he picked up the girls and say, why are you tired? Where have you been?
Maybe. So I still think that they're not going to end up together at the end of the season. As it pains me to say so, it's not looking that way, you guys. It's not. I think we're going to get more information on Bree's background with Megan.
People are not happy about my Wes prediction. I don't think that Abby is going to get back together with Wes. I just think Wes may try or Wes may at least cause a problem.
No, I don't like Wes in the picture either. Like I'm glad that he's there to be supportive in that way, but I don't like him with Abby. I don't know, for some reason just somewhat toxic. But
Start a storyline and then we forget it the next week, so he'll probably be back next week.
And
what about Douglas?
If Douglas came back, he could also be another person that would support Abby taking this regional position. Oh shoot,
because someone brought him up and said I think Abby may get with the PTA dad. Why else would they introduce him?
I don't know.
Thank you for bringing that up, Casey.
And then also, I think this Trace Riley ban is going to stop. I think Trace is going he's going to call it off. The ban's going to go back to Nashville. He's going to stay in Chesapeake Shores and run the business.
Will he try to get that solo deal back and be declined by Mark? Is that the guy's name?
He's going to grow up and become the businessman, but I think he's going to call it quits with the ban, or like he's going to end the ban himself. Like, he had to get them back together to see where he wanted to.
You think he's going to choose a business identity over a superstar country musician? Interesting.
I think he's going to end the band, but he's still going to have his own career. But other than that, let's wrap it. Where can everyone follow you?
Twitter and Instagram, Dr. Lovegrove. Come say hi, Chessies.
There you go. And you can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. You can follow all of us here, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms at AfterBuzzTV. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing, keep watching our show. We have a guest coming up very soon. So stay tuned, Chessies, and we will see you next time.
Have a great week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.